Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. The Columbus Blue Jackets take on the Minnesota Wild in their season opener tonight. From new players to new management, there's been a lot of change for the team, including key players being sidelined by injuries and the unthinkable loss of Johnny Gaudreau and his brother Matthew in August. Most sports analysts predict the Jackets will have another losing season, maybe even finish last place in their division again. So how does a brand new coach rally a team hit by so many tragedies and disappointments? How do they turn the page? We're joined now by reporter Aaron Portsline, who covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for The Athletic. Aaron, welcome to All Sides.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Even before we get to the events of this summer, the Blue Jackets weren't coming off a great season. They were last in the division in 2023 and in 2022. So it's been a series of unfortunate years or seasons.
Yes. If you want to be a cynic, it's been a series of 25 unfortunate years. They're one of the losingest franchises in sports, certainly in the National Hockey League. They did have a little streak there, 4 years with the playoffs, but it's been a tough stretch since. And really, not too many times for this organization have been more full of turmoil than the last few years. They've technically had four coaches now in 3 years, one that didn't even make it to the start of the season. And incredible turnover. They have a new GM. They have a new coach. This is not how you would, what anyone would choose to run a sports franchise. It's just, it's been kind of all over the map here in recent years. And I think this new group is really intent on stability, clear direction, no gray areas with players is something you hear a lot. And they are really driven to, as many have come before them, to get it right. And one of the reasons people like this opportunity is because the city of Columbus, the fans of the Blue Jackets, have really supported this team beyond what many markets would, despite the chronic losing. And there are a lot of people who want to be the first to deliver for this city and this franchise. And that's sort of a challenge they take personally.
Yeah, they had the rebuilding effort started in earnest, I think, in 2020, 2021 with the addition of Johnny Gaudreau. That was a big get. They were essentially building a team around him.
Yeah, no question. And honestly, it's kind of a funny story. They had really paired the roster of a lot of veteran players, and it turned it over to the kids, what they refer to in the NHL and other leagues as a rebuild. And they went into free agency that year. Johnny Gaudreau was the biggest name available. And he wasn't even on their radar. And in fact, when his people first reached out to the Blue Jackets and said Johnny Gaudreau would be interested in playing there, they thought it was an attempt to get the Blue Jackets in and drive up the price on Gaudreau for the teams that seemed like the destination.
To be part of a bidding war.
Correct. And it took a little while before the Blue Jackets were convinced that this wasn't a prank being pulled on them, if you will. And it came together quickly once they realized it wasn't. There was not an ulterior motive. So he was kind of a pleasant surprise. And then they started deciding to build around him. I don't think this is something they ever thought was a possibility. So it kind of felt like a dream come true, because this is a franchise that had lost so many players who, through their actions, through their words, made it clear that they didn't wish to be here. They wanted to go somewhere else for more money, different place to live, whatever. And here is one of the great stars of the league picking Columbus. They were absolutely smitten and couldn't get the deal done quick enough.
Yeah, and I mean, they did not have great seasons in 2022, 2023, but you got the sense that Gaudreau was committed to the idea of trying to turn the team around, of trying to rebuild.
Yeah, he for sure was. He never seemed to waver in his desire to be here. I think he was a family first guy through and through. Saw this as a place where Columbus, where he could raise his growing family and be, how to put this nicely, close to his family, but not too close. It's kind of how a kid picks college sometimes. Because he loves being close to his family a day's drive away, but I don't think he wanted 30, 40 people at a game every night that he felt he needed to entertain beyond being the player. But yeah, and so they just sort of waited. They had a bunch of young players. They still have most of them who have very bright NHL futures. You never know when an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid is going to pop and really start to thrive in the NHL. They definitely need some of that to happen this summer, but Gaudreau was fully on board with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. He wasn't that old when he died. He was, I think, 30 or 31. And but the crazy thing is there are teammates, there are players on that team who grew up watching him, which was like fascinating to me.
Yeah, and it's something that I knew while he was alive, and it came into greater focus. After his passing, he was such an inspiration. I mean, he's one of those guys, if you were to meet him on the street, you would be shocked at his size. He was a, I think he was 5 foot 6. I don't believe the 5 foot 7 or 5 foot 9 that he's listed at places. He was more like 4 foot 6. I don't think he ever weighed more than 160 pounds. And he was able to thrive among giants. And there are so many kids that if they're small, if they haven't had a growth spurt yet, they consider soccer instead of hockey, or basketball instead of something other than hockey, because they're just not big enough to play that sport. And Johnny Gaudreau showed them otherwise. There are other examples. But the name Johnny Hockey landed on him, stuck, and he became to so many an inspiration. And there are guys like that in the Columbus Blue Jackets room, absolutely.
Yeah, and then we lost him at the end of August in a tragic accident. He was bicycling with his brother ahead of their sister's wedding and was hit by an allegedly drunk driver. That case is being adjudicated. It's working its way through court. But yeah, it was just such an unbelievable story. Do you like? I believe it started to come out late that Thursday evening into the next morning. When you first heard it, the first whiff of the rumor, like, what was your initial reaction?
Well, Annie, you know how things are on social media.
You
It,
never
it,
know.
you never know. You don't know what to believe when you start to see several different people saying, "I know someone who works for the New Jersey police, and here's what's gone down." We had a staff meeting. We don't usually do this. We had a staff meeting at about, might have been 11 o'clock at night. Several editors, several other writers, to talk about this, and quickly came to the conclusion that we're not doing anything with this until it's confirmed by police, by the family, by the
The
Columbus
team.
Blue Jackets, by the league, by his agent, some official source. And we, did we have stories in line ready to go? Because the team was contacted. They had no response, which is
Usually a bad sign in these situations.
usually a bad sign, certainly not enough to go with, as you
No.
well know. But yeah, and the team made an announcement early the next morning, and it just, I mean, it's just, it was devastating for so many on so many different levels, and it just complete and utter sadness and devastation with fans, with hockey players all over the world, players who knew him, players who didn't, certainly his teammates and within the organization, just pure sad devastation.
Yeah, I think the senselessness of it too. This guy trying to pass on the right-hand side, hitting it just, I mean, we all see aggressive drivers every day of our lives, right? We see people doing things where you're like, oh, that seems like a terrible idea, but
Right.
just the senselessness of it really gets to me.
Yeah, the senselessness of it for sure. And you know, there were so many layers to this too that like it just felt like
The more you
every
learn, the worse it got.
yeah, exactly. Like and it's hard to imagine that because the initial just the pure loss of life for those two, Johnny and Matthew, is devastating enough, but two little kids, right? Sister's wedding the next day, they were to be groomsmen. His wife's pregnant. Matthew's wife was pregnant. We all know those families that are so incredibly tight-knit. I think I've been thinking about this a lot. That group is so tight-knit, like they were always all around each other. There are hilarious stories of Johnny going on a first date with his with a girl and his brother. Like what? Like who does that on a first date, right? They were just inseparable, all of them. The dad was here all the time. I have to think that makes the initial wave of this so much more devastating. It probably is going to be their greatest strength on the other side of this. I don't think you move on. I think you learn to move with some of these tragedies that affect your life. But yeah, it's they that family was legendary in their tight-knitness, if that's a way to put it.
We also want to hear from you this hour. If you're a Blue Jackets fan, if you were a Johnny Gaudreau fan, if you have thoughts about the upcoming season, give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email your comments to allsides@wosu.org. You know, we've been talking about the personal impact on his family, on his friends, on the fans, really, the community. I think sometimes, so often, sports teams, I don't know if this is the right word, but it almost feels like, in some ways, sports teams kind of become part of the soul of the community because there's so much passion. People get so excited. And even though you only see the player on the ice or the field or the court, you form this attachment to them in a way, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. It does. And I think it's even, I think it may even be more intense in hockey because hockey still, to so many people, feels it's a smaller community, certainly than football. And let's not kid ourselves, there are football fans who are also hockey fans. There's not one or the other. But intense hockey, there are no halfway hockey fans. There are no sort of, you know, I kind of like hockey. They are obsessive. In a wonderful way, usually. And they do feel like you go to Nationwide and they're not there because this is a championship team with you know, Ovechkin and Crosby and McDavid, like the players, singular players that are worth the price of admission. They love their team and they are committed to their team, and it's a really tight-knit group. And you saw that at the vigil that they had for Gaudreau. Like it was really, really emotional, just to be with that many people holding candles, a moment of silence, and to hear the players speak, including a young player just turned 21. I can't imagine being at that age and grabbing the microphone to step forward among a throng of people to talk about your friend that just passed. But it is an incredibly tight-knit group, and you certainly they know Johnny Gaudreau as a player. They do sort of feel like he's part of their extended family. And there were 13 jerseys and 13 shirts all over the place that night, and they did not go by them that day. They had them well worn, 13 hats, everything.
Yeah, you even saw them from his previous team, even people who had been following him his whole career.
100%. Yeah. And Calgary's an interesting point to what you just said, Anna. They were absolutely furious, many of them, with Gaudreau when he opted to leave Calgary. They were even more furious when they learned he was coming to Columbus. Why Columbus? Like you left us for there? Because It's not the city, it's the fact that there's just not been a lot of success here. They didn't understand why he would come here, though he tried to explain it. Of course, the moment that this tragedy becomes known, all of that gets put aside. You knew it would eventually. It's like when Rick Nash left here and came back. For most people, that's water under the bridge now. And Calgary's response was absolutely beautiful, heartfelt, touching, emotional, all of those things. Two vigils the same night on opposite ends of this continent, the hockey world mourning the loss of one of their own.
Yeah. So how are the Blue Jackets as a team themselves handling it? I'm sure they've had grief counselors for the players. There's going to be a memorial for him at the opening game. Like it's you don't it, but it's just got to be complicated for the team to come together. Because I always think when somebody dies, right, that first holiday, that first birthday, those first events are so difficult to get through. I wonder how they're feeling coming into this first game without him.
Right. And it feels so trivial to say, as some point had to be said after the funeral, after all of the I don't think the shock wore off, but at some point it's got to get back to hockey, and you're like, wow, that just seems so unimportant right now. And I think what really helped. It was absolutely gut-wrenching to listen to Meredith Gaudreau eulogize her husband. And but part of her eulogy was expressing to the players that he would want them to have fun at the rink, as much fun as he always had at the rink. He would want them to play hockey with fun. He would want this is their way that they can honor him. Boone Jenner, the great captain of the Blue Jackets, met with the GM and the coach right after the news broke, and his desire was to have everybody together. Like there were still players trickling into town ahead of training camp. Move up your schedules. Let's all get together. I have to say, as devastating as this is, the way that it's been handled by the organization, by the players, has been breathtaking and at times beautiful. And they have, again, it just sounds so trivial to worry about hockey in the wake of something like this, but they have found a way. Dean Evason's the new coach has been, and if you understand his personal story, you see why. He has been really good about just being out front and open with it. They don't talk about, they do talk about Johnny Gaudreau. They discuss him. They speak of him. They don't act like it didn't happen or he was never there. His jersey hangs in the dressing room. He's a player that they still speak of frequently. When they showed clips at the start of the season, what to do, what not to do to the players, highlights from the previous season, the video coach said, "Do you want me to take out the Gaudreau clips?" They're like, no, he was part of this team. So like they've really sort of tried to be as open and frank about it. There's still really tough times, obviously. I think the home opener is going to be very difficult. I think tonight in St. Paul is going to be difficult. But they've really handled it, I think, with about as good a touch as you can.
We're going to take a short break, but coming up, we're going to talk about how the Blue Jackets are focusing on building a new team with a new head coach and a bunch of new players. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staber. We're talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets this hour and how they're moving on from a series of difficult challenges, including the recent death of Johnny Gaudreau. Their season opening is tonight against the Minnesota Wild. Still with us is Aaron Portsline, who covers the Blue Jackets for The Atlantic. We're now also joined by Jean-Luc Grandpierre, a former Blue Jacket and a current studio analyst for Bally Sports Regional Sports Network. Jean-Luc, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, we talked a lot in the first segment about Johnny Gaudreau and what his loss has meant to the team. But, you know, there were two key players, one of which was Captain Boone Jenner, who's now out for weeks. Jean, going into this first game, they've lost a lot of players that were a big part of the team in the last season.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that Don Waddell and Dean Evason did not foresee, nor, you know, nobody in the world saw a situation like that for Columbus Blue Jackets. And, you know, another key player that, you know, they traded in the past summer was Patrick Laine as well. So now all of a sudden you have a lot of scoring power and guys that, you know, are used to put the puck in the back of the net and create some offense for this team that are going to be missing, whether we're talking about Johnny Gaudreau, Patrick Laine, Boone Jenner, and then now Dmitry Voronkov as well. So a lot of holes in the lineup right now. It's going to be a difficult start of the season for this group, not only emotionally, but also as far as manpower. So it'll be yet another challenge for this young club.
Yeah, Aaron, you're probably going to, I guess if you're going to put a positive spin on it, there's a lot of young players who might have a moment to show us what they're made of.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, I think if you're a Blue Jackets fan, that might be what you have to wrap your arms around this season is it's probably not going to be a great season if measured by the standings. But if they come out of this season with Adam Fantilli, who turns 21, I think, tomorrow night.
Oh, my goodness. I think sometimes you forget how young these players are.
Exactly. If they could come out of this with him looking like a number one center, which is one of the most coveted positions in the league, you start to feel better about things. If Kent Johnson finally realizes his incredible skill and gets up and over, he's had a wonderful camp. There's a cluster of four or five young players, your Gorchinikov, that if those guys, and they've had lots of time in the NHL already the last couple of years, if this is the year that they pop, I think people would start to feel better about what the near future could be like. But this is most likely going to be a rough season.
I want to take a call from Tim in Clintonville. Welcome to All Sides, Tim.
Hey, yes, thank you for your time and the opportunity. Just wanted to remind folks about the funding history for Nationwide Arena in terms of how the Blue Jackets were part of that. My understanding, and you're welcome to correct me if I'm incorrect, is that voters were asked about that at least on one occasion, and they voted it down. And then there was another referendum later on, I believe. And then in spite of that, the county decided that it was still a good idea for the county and the citizens to pay for that. And just kind of wondering about what your perception is of that. I'm not trying to take away from what's going on during your show, but I think it's important to keep that in mind in terms of how those things work out sometimes.
You know, Aaron, I think that's a good point just because, I mean, how we fund stadiums, arenas, that's always a controversial conversation.
It is. And the question it boils down to always is, if this is such a great idea for everyone, then, well, you build it, Mr. Billionaire. I think if memory serves, it was not specifically the Nationwide Arena plan for an NHL franchise, but the idea of building an arena downtown or in the city, I believe, was shot down three times by voters. Again, I don't think all of those were attached to the fact that an NHL team could come, but the last one certainly was. And then the owner and founder, John H. McConnell, is no longer with us, stepped forward and built the arena himself. It was years later when the lease agreement ceased to make much sense financially, that a portion of the team was sold to Franklin County. They took over the arena. This is, you know, it's probably a topic for another day, but it is what's happened here, as it's happened in much worse scenarios in other cities. If you walk through Nationwide Arena today and realize that it was built, I believe, for $150 million.
Really?
That's a lot of money, but some of these buildings being put up today were in the billions. And it is a beautiful building, and I don't think there's any question. There have been studies done that, I don't know the specifics of them, that arenas don't lead to economic growth. It's hard for me to imagine that Columbus is not a more attractive and a more livable city, certainly downtown with the arena district and all of that's popped up around it, than it was with the federal prison that was there. As pleasant as the ruins of that old building were to drive past every day, no major city wants that right in the heart of their downtown. So that would be my argument the other direction.
Jean-Luc, the Blue Jackets during the offseason hired a new coach, Dean Evanson. He is the latest in a string of coaches. As a former player, it's got to be challenging to have new coach after new coach after new coach.
Oh, it definitely is a big challenge, Anna, not only as a player, but any member of the organization, because each coach have typically their own philosophy. So as a player, there's a lot of adjustment that you have to do every time a new coach come on board, especially for a young guy, right? You get in the league, now you understand, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. By the time 3/4 of the season is, passed by and you're starting to feel good about the way you're playing it within that system, and then you play 20 games and then, oh, new coach come in. Now you have to start kind of over again. And for a veteran player, it is frustrating because stability, whether it's your personal life, your professional life, we all know stability is usually pretty good. Change is good, but change every single season, not necessarily. And that's been the case, unfortunately, for the Blue Jackets over the past three seasons. So hopefully, with Dean Evason, it will be a completely different story. You look at his track record. This is a guy that's extremely competitive. And like Aaron said earlier, it's going to be a challenging year on the ice for the Blue Jackets. But for me, it is more than the result. It is, there's losing and then there's losing. There's a term we used to play to use all the time in the locker room. It's like, did we give everything that we had or no, right? It's like, if you show up every night, well, most nights, and can put a performance, I think people can get behind you. But if they see you quit, they're going to stop spending their money as well.
I think that makes sense. It also probably just goes to your own morale. Like, did you give it everything you got or no?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the key. As a professional athlete, you want to be the best. You know you're not going to have your best every single night, but you have to find a way to dig in and try to get as much as you can out of your player as a coach. And as a player, it's your job as well to do the same and push your teammates to do so. And hopefully that's what we see here this season.
Aaron, it seems there's also that Evanson isn't waiting to make his mark on the team. It's my understanding that in some of the preseason during the tryouts, he had a different philosophy. He brought in fewer guys. He cut people more quickly. He's very quickly started to exercise his own approach.
Yes, and I think some of that was in the wake of the Gaudreau tragedy. Like, let's keep this small and as tight-knit as possible. I think, they wanted to get down to their team as quick as possible so that there could be as much bonding as possible. What I think the other part that listeners may find interesting is the players went to Don Waddell, the veteran players, when asked, and they didn't say hire Dean Evason, but they said hire a coach that is going to hold us to account, push us. Like, as crazy as it may sound to some people out there, there are players in that room that miss John Tortorella. They never thought they'd say that, but there are. And Dean Evason is not as outwardly bombastic as Tortorella can be. I think it's a nice way to say it. But he is a driven coach. There's no gray area. And there's a new message in the Blue Jackets dressing room about how everything is earned, not given. And I think we're going to see the fruits of that this season. And lineup choice, I think we've already started to see it. There's a young defenseman on the back end, David Juracek, that everyone wants to be ready to play in the top four and play a prominent role on defense. And he's not ready. And they've made that clear. He's still on the team, but he's not playing tonight. He'll have to play his way back into the lineup. I think you're going to see stuff like that throughout the season. And I think there are a lot of players who are here for it.
And just a reminder, if you want to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513. Jean-Luc, there have been a few veteran hires, and Sean Monahan comes to mind. He played with Goudreau. He essentially came to continue playing with Goudreau. That's got to be so difficult.
Yeah, that's a really tough situation for Sean Monahan. This is a guy, you know, they kind of grew up in the Calgary organization together. And he was extremely close to Johnny Gaudreau, and they were going to be a stallmate, you know, sitting next to each other. You know, they're going to most likely hang out a lot on the road, because even when Johnny Gaudreau was in going to Calgary for road trips and vice versa, they always hung out. Their wives were good friends. Their dream was to raise their children together. And, you know, that happened, and everything changed that late August night for both families. So for him, emotionally, it's definitely going to be a big challenge. I think being on the ice, being with new teammates, and being able to, I don't want to say forget, but focus on something else has definitely been a plus for Sean Monahan. But really, during the season, over the next few seasons, is really when we're going to see the impact that that took on him, the toll that it took on him and his family, which I cannot even imagine going through. Not only to lose a teammate, but, you know, really one of your best friend and one of the main reason that you came to Columbus. So it's a tough situation, but hopefully they can surround him, his family, and his teammates can really step up and be a big support for him through this tough time. But as far as Sean Monahan, the player, this is a guy that's going to bring stability at the center ice position for the next 2-3 seasons until Adam Fantilli can show that he's ready to take the reins and take this team over. So we'll see. We're crossing our fingers. But again, you can never know how one individual is going to react based on, you know, past trauma or tragedy. And we hope that everything's going to go well for him while he's in Columbus.
You know, Aaron, one of the things I find fascinating about Ohio sports fans generally is they stay so loyal through the good times and the bad things. I mean, you look at the Browns, you look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, like, I don't know, like, they have rough goes of it, but people stick around. Like, I've been to games at Nationwide, and, you know, almost everybody in there is in a Blue Jackets jersey. And I know they didn't just buy it to go to that game.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, Anna, so you're speaking my language. It is something. I mean, I think it is part of, I for real sports fans, I think it's part of the challenge, right? Like, you just can't stop. I mean, I think there have been some people that maybe have drifted away, but they didn't drift away to the Penguins or the Sabres or the Leafs, or, you know, they don't go anywhere else. There are hardcore fans. I do a weekly podcast, see a lot of familiar names pop up with some just listening, some with questions, comments on the story from this similar group of intense people. And the one thing, Jean-Luc will tell you this too, it's there's nothing that they're not interested in, any aspect of the team that they're not interested in. And I, you know, the other thing we keep hearing, and I think it's probably true, although the Browns have not revealed this to me through the many years, is it does make it sweeter when you finally accomplish the dream. And I think there's a lot of people that are holding out for the, you know, the playoff runs were great. And now let me say this real quick at the risk of going on and on. It is incredible that this team still has the fan following it has when in this quarter century of play, they've won a playoff series. They've won two if you count the qualifying round in 2020. But they have not taken this city on a run yet, which is really where fan bases latch on and kids become generational fans of a team. They've not done that. And they still have throngs of fans that are waiting for them to get it together. They have better fans, if I can say this. They have better fans, frankly, than they deserve to have after 25 years.
Rena, coming up, we're going to talk about the Blue Jackets hitting the ice in the horseshoe. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Still with us this hour is Aaron Portsline, who covers the Blue Jackets for The Athletic, and Jean-Luc Grandpierre, a former Blue Jacket and current studio analyst for Bally Sports Regional Sports Network. We're talking about the CBJ this hour and the challenges they've faced both in the off-season and in growing the franchise. But this season, the Blue Jackets are going to play a special game against the Detroit Red Wings in Ohio State's horseshoe. It's an outdoor game, Jean-Luc. That's like everything about this is just going to be different. Like it could snow.
It could snow or it could be 82 degrees. Time will tell. And that's the beauty of Ohio, right? Especially in March. But this is exciting. Listen, as a player, it's quite the experience. I've never had the chance to do it here in North America. I've done it in Europe, but it's you almost forget about the game because it's an experience that everybody's looking forward to. So as a player, it's special, but more importantly for the fans, it is an event. It is kind of like the Super Bowl of hockey, although the game doesn't mean all that much aside from 2 points for whoever wins or loses that game. But to have two fan base in the horseshoe, in a historic stadium like the horseshoe, obviously, is going to be quite the spectacle. And it's not just about the game. There's also activities, whether it's before, after, tailgating. Everything is part of that experience. And the NHL has done a good job promoting those events. To be honest with you, as a hockey fan and somebody who follows hockey a lot, it's almost like, oh, my gosh, I'm seeing too many of these games now. But to have it here in Columbus is definitely going to be special because I've never attended one in person. So that'll be my first experience. But like I said, everybody's excited about it. The players are excited about it. And it's a well-run event by the league that they do a few times a season. And I cannot wait. Now, we'll see if it's snowing or if it's raining or if it's 85 degrees. We'll find out, but I'm sure it will happen no matter what.
Yeah, Aaron, the shoe sits more than 100,000 people. So yeah. I think, you know, for the Blue Jackets, it might be the biggest audience they've ever had. The other thing is having, you know, I'm an Ohio State football fan, being in the shoe when people get worked up and there's 100,000 fans, it's almost deafening.
Yeah, well, they're looking for an attendance record. That's what they want. The attendance record for an outdoor hockey game is 104,173. The league doesn't know yet. They know baseline how many tickets they can sell, and they're selling them now. They won't know exactly how many people they can fit in until they get it aligned and in place and all those good things. So, but you know, Anna, you know how Ohio State operates. They're not doing this if they're not taking a run at the attendance record. And the players and the coaches went to Ohio Stadium Saturday for the Iowa game. They were there, of course, as a team bonding, but also as sort of a site visit, if you will. And Dean Evason, the coach, said that at halftime they went down on the field, got to experience that. He said as he looked up around it, he's been to Rome and has seen the Colosseum up front. He said a lot of his friends are giving him a hard time with this analogy, but it did remind him presence-wise of the Colosseum. Certainly not the historical impact of the Colosseum. He's excited to coach there. I think the players are excited to play there. You just hope, maybe against hope, that on March 1st, the Blue Jackets still have a reason to play that game in the standings, that there's something to be gained with that game, that it's not just a glorified exhibition, but I think it's going to be an incredible day, a day they waited for a very long time. And there will be well over 100,000 people to watch a hockey game in Columbus, Ohio. Who predicted that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, going to the Shoe is just an experience in and of itself. So I think it's going to be really unique. I do hope it's not like 50 degrees and raining because that would be miserable. But we can't do anything about the weather. Will there be any other outdoor games happening this season? I know Jean-Luc said that there's a couple each year, so they just happen in different parts of the country.
Yeah, there's a Winter Classic, and let me, I should know this, that the Blue Jackets game is what they call a stadium series. So it's a celebration of the venue. The Winter Classic is done on January 1st, and there are various reasons if you know what Columbus, Ohio, and college football is all about, that January 1st may or may not be a great idea to have a game in Ohio Stadium. It could conflict with the college football.
The playoffs. I know they're so extended now.
Right. And that used to be, of course, New Year's Day used to be a big deal in college football. They've sort of ceded that a little bit. The Winter Classic this year is the Seattle Kraken and the, wait a minute, the St. Louis Blues and Chicago Blackhawks.
In Chicago.
Whew.
In
Oh,
Chicago. Is
that's
that
going to be
Wrigley Field?
cold.
Could be
Is
chilly.
that Wrigley Field they're playing at, Jean-Luc?
Yes.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah, that's going to be cold.
Yeah, it is. So the stadium series is in Columbus. And I will tell you this, the NHL has seen Ohio Stadium. Is this is taking a long time to get this game together. That they see that as like one of their last big venues, desired venues that they've been able to stage a game in. They've been in Fenway, they've been in Wrigley, they've been all over the place, Dodger Stadium even. This was a big deal to them, and they're delighted that it's come together.
Yeah, I know there's some questions if we end up depending on how the college football playoff works, whether Ohio State would have to play three or four games, whether there'd be a game at Ohio State. I know there's a lot of moving parts as we get through there as to how quickly they can start converting for the hockey game.
Exactly.
So I want to ask both of you, and we can start with you, Jean-Luc, what are you looking for this season? Like, what are you hoping to see? What are you expecting to see from the Blue Jackets? I guess, what's your predictions?
So as far as prediction, I do not see the Columbus Blue Jackets being a playoff team. I think it would be completely unrealistic. This is obviously there's been some setbacks, and for me, it's really the growth. And Aaron talked about it a little bit earlier, but I want to see, Adam Fantilli, sophomore year, what can he achieve? Kent Johnson did not have a good season last year. He's looking much better this season and through training camp anyway. How can he produce under that new coach? And that's one thing with Dean Evason is he came in with no preconceived notion of what the players were like. He kind of want a fresh start and really did not want to hear any outside noise about what happened last year or 2 years ago. So he's giving a fair chance to everyone to really show what they have. And, you know, Elvis Merzlikens is part of that group, obviously. You know, Damon Severson is looking to bounce back after a tougher season in his first year in the Blue Jackets jersey after coming from New Jersey. So there's a lot of players that veterans that you want to see have a better season, but also, you know, younger guys that you want to see that next step in the development, because it's fun to be the youngest team in the league all the time, but this can't last. I mean, it seems like every year we're like, this is a young team, this is a young team. And like, at some point as a fan, you're like, all right, it's nice to talk about young guys, but show me something, right? So I think this is a year where you want to really see the team and those young guys take a step forward and see really what you have here for the future.
What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, much the same as Jean-Luc. For me, it's all about the kids. You want to see Fantilli look like a number one center. You want to see Kent Johnson look like an elite level playmaker. You want to see Chinnikov push 20, 25 goals. This is all realistic. Marchenko can be a 30-goal scorer. If they come out of this season with those guys looking like impact NHL players, I think you start to feel pretty good about the situation. I want to see Dean Evason's impact on them. The other thing, I'm not looking too far ahead, but one thing that fans should be prepared for is they have a lot of unrestricted free agents, so veterans with expiring contracts that, awkwardly perhaps, right after the outdoor game, we're talking within a week of that thing, is the trade deadline. And I would suspect that Don Waddell, still looking to put his stamp on this team, is going to be very active. So that's Ivan Provorov, the veteran defenseman. That's Sean Corrali, veteran center who's from Columbus. That's Van Riemsdyk. That's a bunch of different guys, who Jack Johnson, who still lives in Columbus. I think there are a host of players that could be moved at the trade deadline as they continue to sort of point toward what they hope are better days ahead.
Any chance that next season we get the number one draft pick?
Well, there's all... Yeah, let's not get crazy.
There's always a chance. You never know with the lottery. But, yeah, if you look back at the history, I don't like our chances. Aaron, what do you think?
Well, they're due. We've actually brought in mathematicians, people far smarter than I am, to look at all of the odds they've had through the years and what are the chances that they haven't won it. And they are the most overdue team. to actually win the lottery. Who knows? Maybe this is the year. Maybe Don Waddell and his new staff are the magic potion.
I want to end on a bit of a happier note. During the offseason, Aaron, you had kidney transplant surgery, and the kidney actually came from someone in the Blue Jackets organization. Such a strange turn of events.
Yeah, it was such an amazing turn of events. Thank you, man. I didn't know you were going here. I had transplant surgery April 26th, so we're a little more than 5 months out. Lindy Knoll, who works for the Blue Jackets, turned out to be the match. Incredibly, first surgery she's ever had is a transplant surgery. How about that? Stepped forward, volunteered to have surgery. You don't hear that very often.
It's an incredible gift.
It is an incredible gift, and I'm still not sure... I'm a guy who works with words. I'm still short of words for how to express my thanks. We're going to St. Louis, my family and Lindy and her fiance in November. She's going to be awarded a Stan Musial Award, which is a great honor. They picked 10 great sportsmanship stories from around the world. St. Louis is her hometown, so a big night. For her, I get to present to her, which is maybe a little bit of thank you. I think I'll be saying thank you to her for the rest of my life, however.
Yeah, I want to play a quick clip of Lindy explaining why she chose to donate in the first place.
It was something that I could do to give back. I lost my father in 2018 to cancer, and that was something that... there was no donation that could save his life. So, this felt like something that I could do to make a difference in someone else's life.
I feel like that's a good way to end. So I want to say thank you to Aaron Portsline, who covers the Blue Jackets for The Athletic. Thank you so much.
You, Anna, my pleasure.
And thank you to Jean-Luc Grandpierre, a former Blue Jacket and a current studio analyst for Bally's Sports Regional Sports Network. Thank you so much.
Hi. Thanks, Anna. Pleasure.
The Blue Jackets season opener is tonight, and its home opener is next week. Thank you all so much for listening to All Sides. And I want to give a quick thank you to our producers, Marcus Charleston and Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz, as well as our intern producers, Chris Corcoran, Kira Kadar, and David Stein. Thank you all for listening right here on 89.7 NPR News.